launch a software company, say they have an idea and want to spin up an app, is that something feasible or would you recommend doing something different?
It's definitely feasible, but it is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people that are not detail oriented and able to tackle something of that degree. Software is extremely difficult.
What's up, Mentors Collective? I'm here with Anthony Mastalone. We're going to be talking about paid ads and starting a software company, specifically an AI software company. I'm super curious to hear how you transition and what that growth has been like. But Anthony, thanks for being here with me today.
It's my pleasure, man. Glad to be here.
So one of my favorite things, paid ads, also one of the most valuable things for listeners, people who are learning how to market. It's such an essential skill for people. I'd love to start, like, where do people fuck up with their paid ads? Where do they go wrong?
I think overthinking the granular details are going to make the biggest difference, right? Mm-hmm. It's more so the fundamentals than anything else, right? Where are you going to be able to pull levers that are high impact?
Right.
It's going to be typically your hook, how you're speaking to people, how they interact with your content and the medium of how you're getting it out there. More so than, you know, what should my targeting look like? What should every single piece of design on my lander look like? Pulling those high impact levers, then figure out which iterations are going to move the needle for you more than anything else. People get caught up on tiny things like call to action or, you know, what is a description supposed to be in like the tiniest part of the ads, but like, what does a video look like? What is a hook of your actual video or image content? How are you getting people's attention and then bringing them in to reel them in for more? By tapping into what their needs are and understanding their pain points.
So I like that framework, high value levers that you can pull to get your ads to work and the fundamentals. So let's break down a couple of those levers, if you don't mind. What are the levers? And then let's kind of go through one by one and give some big takeaways for people to adjust on their ads to make the biggest difference. What's the first lever to pull on ads?
Number one is creative. And of course, this varies from medium to medium. Like, yeah. Are you doing paid search? Are you doing paid social? We love Meta. We spend, you know, tens of thousands per day on Meta in lead gen, e-commerce, variety of verticals, right? By way of running paid ads and paid social, it's, of course, creative is taking up the most real estate on anyone's screen. So if you have a video and you're focusing too much on like the latter parts of it or like the meat and potatoes, let's say from 15 to 30 seconds, none of that matters if the first 3 seconds are a total flop, right?
Right.
So definitely your creative is the biggest lever to pull. And same with image, like how are you stopping the scroll? How are you getting someone's attention to be, you know, inquisitive? And that's what we talk about in hooks and even in our training and some of the stuff that we've built into our own software. Selfishly enough, just from, you know, spending so much on Meta and for our clients and our own brands, we ended up building up our own software to then sort of instill all of those copy and winning frameworks to actually have that baked into all of our ads autonomously.
Okay, so creative, number one. You need to have a good hook. And then you said optimal length for an ad, 15 to 30 seconds. Is that correct?
It varies. We have some of our clients that are spending, you know, multiple six figures per day that do long form BSL only. They don't really have anything that is less than 10 minutes for their top of funnel.
Right.
It's like a very long journey that they're taking their customers through. And it all speaks to your specific demo and target market, right?
Yeah.
So are you trying to put it in front of someone that's 25 or 65? It's going to vary based on the type of content that you're putting out there and who you want to speak to.
Right. It's so nuanced. I love talking about marketing. It's like, oh, what do you do? Like, what works? And everyone's like, do this. But the fact is, everybody's successful doing all kinds of different things.
Exactly.
So I like to take everything with a grain of salt. And there's no right way. People are successful doing it all kinds of weird ways. Like running ads to a 20-minute VSL, which I would never do.
Yeah.
But I've also seen people successful doing it.
Exactly.
So as a general framework for people who are running ads for the first time, maybe they're running ads for their third time. It's tanked the first few, which happened to me too. Go back and look at the hook. Other than that, that's lever number one. Be able to get attention with that creative and hold their attention to actually deliver the message. What are some other levers that you can pull?
Then you want to go into the copy. Like, what are the other fallbacks that you have behind that creative? Your headlines, your primary text that's going into that. And then the context of where you're sending that traffic to. Are they filling out a native lead form, or are you sending them to a destination URL where then they have more info to learn? So where are you taking them on that journey, and having that contextually aligned from front to back is most important, right? And you never want to get too caught up on the latter parts of it if you can't accomplish the most important ones at first. So beyond the creative and the hook that you work into that, whether it is hero text across an image or the first 3 seconds to get someone leaning in for more, essentially like that figurative lean in, like, okay, I'm interested. What else you have to offer?
Right.
Definitely text and things around that. If you can build up social proof, testimonials, is there any sort of research or scientific backed studies that have been done on your product showing a testimonial is one of the biggest things that we've done, even for like pet products like these little guys right here. We did tons of before and afters helping them with their allergies or joints. And we've spent millions on Meta specifically on that to help dogs through selling supplements. And we would have never gotten those purchases or that traffic if we never took anyone through that journey and got them to lean in to want to learn more and understand why should we be interested in the first place. Because at the end of the day, when people are scrolling on social, they're on it for themselves. They're not on there to be sold to. They're not on there to shop unless you're on TikTok, like some people every now and then.
Girlfriend loves it too. No shame.
And you want to be there inside of that real estate and capture their attention with something that caters to them and their needs, right? So leaning into those pain points and what could really solve a problem for them. And that's like really relating to the people that are breaking through the most, even in e-commerce right now. People say e-commerce is difficult or dropshipping is dead. Facebook ads are dead. No, it's not. It's just more nuanced. It's more difficult. And if you don't know how to relate to people and lean into what they need more than what you need, you're never going to be able to run ads at a high level.
Going back to the ad copy, what you actually write on the ads, love to hear a little bit about like what's working generally. Are you using emojis? Are you using callouts? Like if you're a business owner doing 10K or more a month, like what are you recommending people do right now for the copy? You know, you mentioned social proof, but is there anything else?
The number one thing is to test. And that's what we bake into every single ad that or even ad account that we're looking to scale is we'll test short and we'll test long. There are some, you know, e-commerce brands that we've run for that we crafted a really compelling story or using like a long form testimonial that worked really well. And then there are other ones where we're running webinar lead gen or insurance lead gen that is literally one sentence and maybe, you know, 5 to 10 words with a direct call to action just because we're so aggressively just getting them to take action and all of the actual selling points and value is in the creative itself. I wouldn't say that there's any, you know, one-to-one framework or something that you can copy and paste that's always going to work. It's always going to be relative paired down to the creative that you're working. So is your video going to do a lot of the heavy lifting and explaining what you're selling?
Right.
If so, you know, you might just need one sentence to really round it out and summarize it and tell them what to do. Is your image just giving them something to get more curious about? Then you could go ahead and get into a longer story in your primary text and headline there.
You mentioned testing yep. being one of the most important things to do for successful ads. What is your framework for testing? How do you test your ads? Is there tools that you use? Do you set up multiple campaigns, ad sets? What process do you go through?
That's actually why we built our own software. We built AdCopy AI for that reason, to streamline the workflows for media buyers and brands to increase their iteration testing by about 10 to 20x. So what you're able to do is just simply upload your creatives and have a structure and create all of the relative copy based on stuff that we read from your ad account and developing brand voice. So many people spend all this money on their ads and their data to never utilize it again or not really understand how to create winning frameworks based off of stuff that has worked. So our direct Meta integration actually does that for them and allows that to be fully developed and baked into every single creative that they launch. So this is just sort of things that I've done in my own way manually in the past and thought, you know, we could actually make this easier for brands and agencies at scale. So in doing so, what we do for our tried and true way, what we prefer is, and of course, everyone has their own different methods. We love ABOs because we like to hold things constant. If you're throwing everything into a collective for Facebook to just run with full freedom, you never really know what every single creative or, you know, hook combination their potential could have been. So what we do is we dedicate an ad set with a single ad within it and a dedicated budget. Of course, varying on the client, it could be $20, it could be $50, it could be $5. We understand how that's going to perform for them by running that separately. So we'll have one ad that has a, you know, creative and hook one. Then we'll have another ad in another ad set with its own dedicated budget that could be the same creative with a different hook. So holding certain things constant is the only way that you're really going to know what is and what isn't working. We'd like to break everything out in that sense and ensure that it could have its dedicated budget.
All right, super helpful. And I love to leverage technology to help you split test because it can be a nightmare, especially when you're running 10 different creatives, 10 different copies, doing them one at a time.
Yep.
And then utilizing that data can be very, very hard. So I'm excited to see this technology really play out. One other thing that you mentioned, people will run ads and say they don't work. I've seen this time and time again, and I just attribute it to other companies are better and they have more money. Is that really the reason that some people can't be successful with ads? Because they're competing against people that are so good and so rich and have been doing it for so long? Or is there a place for the new advertiser out there?
100%. There would never be any new companies arising if there was never room for the new advertiser. I think it's just a limiting belief that a lot of people have, and they're not trying enough things or they're not working hard enough.
Yeah.
There are people that are launching hundreds of new ads every single day So a lot of people, you know, go ahead and roll out one or three or five per day, and they'll be like, oh, well, this sucks. I guess I'm going to give up. At that point, it's just volume, right? So you can't really win if you're not making a serious effort or nevertheless working harder than other people that are doing the same amount of input as you are. And, you know, leveraging technology or trying new things and just replicating different frameworks is definitely one way to go ahead and break through. If you're testing 10 things per day versus one thing per day, you're likely going to have a much shorter time to success rather than just, you know, limiting yourself to a couple different variables.
Cool. So the key is mass testing.
Yes.
What about audiences? How important is that? Like training your pixel, creating the perfect, most specified audience for your ads to run. Do you do that or do you let Facebook run wild?
We've done a hybrid of both, but in all reality, audiences on Facebook and lookalikes are a lot less important, and the targeting itself is a lot less important than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Especially once you do have a significant amount of data. Facebook's AI and their machine learning is more powerful than ever. They have more data than us than ever before, and they're continuing to compound that day over day. So I have faith in them putting the ad in front of the right people. I would much rather put my time and energy towards the actual vehicle and the medium of content that's getting people where you need them to be, and the actual destination if you're sending them to a landing page to ensure that has enough proof, it's well designed, it's easily readable, and the copy or actual assets there are stellar.
Okay, super helpful. Quick game, 1 through 10, 10 being like the most valuable thing in running ads in order to be successful, 1 being not that valuable. How important is the creative in a successful ad campaign? 1 to 10.
A 10, without a doubt.
Creative is a 10. They can't all be 10s.
Okay, fair enough. But I will give creative a 10 because you could even have a subpar media buyer or a subpar structure and still actually break through with a good creative, at least as long as you're not completely backwards.
How do you feel about paying these big creative agencies like $100,000 for a commercial grade creative? Have you done that or experimented with any of that? Harman Brothers.
I'm very familiar with the Harman Brothers. They spoke at one of my events. Well, Benton did, the CEO.
Awesome.
He spoke at one of my events and they're brilliant and they've done phenomenal work and have helped brands reach unbelievable heights. I don't think it's suitable for everyone. If you have the bankroll and you have the experience and you know how to distribute product at scale, then it's probably a wise investment. For people that are a little bit more intermediate, I think it makes sense to be as gritty as you possibly can, even if you're putting out stuff that you're not sure is good.
Yeah.
Just more volume and testing things that are completely different from one another. And like we said, the iteration testing and pulling those high impact levers is definitely the biggest way to go. But those really big videos are huge for big brands. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
I've always wanted one.
I feel you.
Haven't been willing to knuckle up $50,000 for one of those things. Maybe one day.
It hurts, but I mean, they've changed businesses. So, I mean, if we're giving them a grade, they got to be up there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. 1 through 10, the ad copy. How important is it?
The ad copy, I would definitely say it's probably about a 7. Not as impactful as creative itself, but definitely up there, because even if you have a questionable image, you could still sort of lift it up with a good headline and primary text. I'd say, you know, anywhere from a 7 to an 8 for sure.
Okay, great.
But creative has got to be king.
How about the offer itself, like what you're trying to sell or get people to opt into in the ad? 1 through 10.
Oof, all right. Maybe I did give creative too good of a rating. If we were just talking ad buying, I'd put creative up there, but I mean, if 10 is gone, then it's got to be a 9. But offer is huge, because if you don't have anything compelling to sell, you're not going to move it. And you could make up for a bad creative with a really, really compelling offer. No matter how bad your actual creatives are, if it's something that someone desperately needs, I mean, Alex Ramosi says the best thing you could possibly have is a starving market, right? Mm. So being able to give them a good offer and having that starving market, you're pretty much able to sell anything at that point. No matter how bad your storefront is or how bad your landing pages are, if people truly need what you have to sell, they're going to buy it from you.
Speaking of Hormozi and offers, I did a video on this recently, but I've seen so many ads now with marketers, specifically like lead gen agencies and stuff, promising the moon and their mom and everything in between. It's like, if I don't get you $100,000 in the next 30 days, I'll give you 150% refund. And then you go through their funnel to book a call, and then the sales guy has no idea what they were talking about. Have you noticed an increase in those absurd offers? Do they work? What can people think about when putting together a good offer that converts?
For sure. I mean, in a sense, so many people are becoming fully aware of the importance of the offer itself, to the point where they're so willing to over-deliver and over-promise that it almost gets commoditized in a sense. I think the most important thing of an offer is, of course, delivery, right? So you don't want to waste your own time. You don't want to waste your client's time. As long as you know that you can have conviction behind what you're selling and doing so in a really good manner, I think that's, of course, king. But beyond that, it's tough because everyone wants to compete and chase the client base, of course, but it's really a chase to the bottom if you're not focusing on the delivery and actual quality of the services themselves.
1 through 10, how important is the audience in a Facebook ad?
You got to put it in front of the right person, but are you saying like the detailed targeting, for example?
Yeah, so you're building the audience, you're going through the detailed targeting, you're selecting, you know, CEO interested in X, Y, and Z.
When you're first getting started, it's cool because you could kind of lead the ad account in a certain direction, but at the end of the day, Facebook does know based on your creative and the lander that it's sending the traffic to, who it should probably be in front of. At the end of the day, Facebook is a for-profit company. They just had their most profitable quarter ever.
They're
crushing it. Gave out their first dividends in company history. And they are making money where? Off of the advertisers.
Yeah.
They're not selling any products to the users. They're a part of that delivery, right? So it's in their best interest to give you some degree of performance. The targeting and detail targeting itself, I'd put it somewhere around a four, simply for the fact that, you know, we've run broad campaigns and have seen tremendous performance. Some of our biggest spend to this day, I mean, I believe today on our insurance campaigns, we're probably going to spend about $15,000 today on one of our ad accounts. Is no targeting besides the states.
That's huge. Speaking of landing pages, which you just mentioned briefly, how important is that? And what are you using to drive traffic? Is it like ClickFunnels, Go High Level? What is converting the best right now?
So when we're building out our own pages, we use a mix of a few different things. So we could sometimes build out something scrappy and quick inside of Webflow, mm-hmm. if it's for our SaaS. If we're doing webinars, we love using ClickFunnels. And then good old fashioned HTML designers, from Figma to HTML, and having something custom built out is really the proper way to do it if you want to do it the right way and make sure it's truly done to your desired spec, as you do have some limitations with ClickFunnels and everything else, as you can imagine. But yeah, it depends on the offer and what we're looking to build. For a simple webinar funnel that we're looking to spin up or have our clients run, a lot of them are running ClickFunnels and it works great. You know, we're seeing anywhere from 40 to 60% of those people end up opting in. We feel great about the product. We don't really need to reinvent the wheel in any sense of the way. Sometimes simplicity is actually great and it doesn't have to be the prettiest thing. So it varies from page to page. And then, we have a multitude of them.
Cool. Landing page importance, 1 to 10.
I'm going to put that at like a 7.
It's crazy because it all works together. And if you fuck up at one step, then the whole thing breaks.
Exactly.
And new marketers won't know which step in which it's breaking. And it can be really frustrating to go through that. And you're spending all this money on ads, like, it's not working. But your tracking is not set up correctly. You don't know how many people on your landing page are converting, your cost per click. So it's a lot of stuff and it's daunting. So, I mean, if you're listening to this and you want to get good at ads, is there a course that you took or that you teach that you might point people to that was transformative for you?
My best learning was from trial and error. And for some of the people that might need to get out there and let's say they don't have the budget to spend their own money.
Yeah.
It's, of course, putting yourself in the position in the right rooms, whether it's an internship or providing services for free, to then go ahead and mess around with other people's budgets that could perhaps afford to lose a little bit.
Right. Learn with other people's money.
Exactly. OPM is great. But for me, it was trial and error. I didn't really do too much inside of learning and courses side of that. I did take a few courses on like learning how to write better copy, for example, webinars, of course, as well. That was definitely one that I learned a lot from. Jason Fladlin was ridiculous in teaching how to sell through webinars, which has always really resonated with me. Besides that, it was primarily trial and error.
All right, cool. And you were an advertiser for a long time, 10 years. You had an ad agency and you did what most entrepreneurs dream about, which is taking all that and starting a software company. And Hormozi tried it, kind of failed. And he says that a software company without a developer co-founder is like doomed to fail. I've always wanted to start a software company. It terrifies me. Talk to me about that experience. What has it been like launching it? Do you have investors? Do you have partners? Walk me through that experience.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I have a technical co-founder.
Awesome.
So he doubles as a CTO, which is amazing. It's great to be able to have someone that could run point on the technical side of a business.
Yeah.
And the impact is profound because it just frees up my ability to focus on what I do best, which is marketing and operations. Being able to piece the puzzle together, build the right team for him, get the right developers and hires in place. And the biggest impact that we've definitely learned being live now for about 16 months now, since we started developing the project, is getting the A players in and understanding when to fire fast.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that those do not linger is really important. And nothing beats people that are motivated, have the energy to work on stuff from scratch and want to be bought into a bigger vision than themselves, right?
What does your team look like right now? I know you've got the technical co-founder, but what were some of those first hires and what have some of the biggest hires you've made so far?
We're still pretty lean and scrappy. There's about seven of us total. Awesome. So we have our CTO, a few developers under him. We just made two fantastic hires that we feel really good about. First time hiring in the local area rather than a remote employee, which is very interesting there. So we're stoked for that, to be able to do some more in-person work. Historically speaking, we've always been 100% remote, but we're growing fast and very excited because we could see how much quicker we could ship features and also just iterate on stuff as well. So growing on that side. And then beyond that, we have two advisors, two people that I'm lucky to call some of my closest friends, David Abrams, Wyatt Jaswowski. They formerly created Demio, which got acquired by Banzai and went public recently. So they are also on the cap table and serve as my eyes and ears, some of the most brilliant guys that I know. And I think that's a big mistake that a lot of people make when it comes to software. They are so quick to sort of withhold everything and try to keep everything themselves. Like, software is a big, beautiful thing once you get it working at scale, because you could serve so many people, but it's very difficult to do by yourself. And having the right people at the table there with you, both literally and figuratively between cap table and and not, is extremely important. So technical co-founder who could spearhead everything and making sure that our product and vision comes to life. I have two advisors that are great at product and operations and baking in a great ethos and EQ and vision to ensure that we're staying aligned and sort of like my guardrails and second set of eyes and ears that make sure we're going in the right direction and the ship is sailing properly, and then make everything get executed and go into place. So I think that that's a huge thing in making sure that you're building teams that are foundationally sound, getting great minds together to make something come to fruition.
Yeah, team's so important. Talk to me a little bit about the launch. How'd you get the idea? Did you need funding? How long did it take to get an operational product?
So having a technical co-founder that is actually in the code was super beneficial. We were able to launch an MVP without any funding, without any hires. We got to that point and we said, all right, now we have a good foundation. Let's actually take this a little bit more seriously. We took some small investment pre-revenue, but nothing too substantial. We're probably going to do a seed round sometime this year. And then beyond that, if we needed to inject any capital, we handled that ourselves. So a mix of investors and our own capital to get us to where we are today. And looking to continue coasting off of that till we could actually leverage other people's money to take it to the next level.
Do you think you were, I guess, successful in launching this company because you had your own capital to put into this and your own experience? Or do you think this is something that a new entrepreneur could potentially do? Launch a software company, say they have an idea and want to spin up an app. Is that something feasible, or would you recommend doing something different?
It's definitely feasible, but it is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people that are not detail-oriented and able to tackle something of that degree. Software is extremely difficult. Most software companies fail, just like many businesses, but it is extremely nuanced, and understanding so many different facets of it by way of product market fit and actually making an impact to the point where people will not only sign up, you know, creating a free software is one thing, but voting with your credit card is a completely different beast. And not only doing it once, but month over month or paying annual. So that's when you start to realize that you're making an impact in someone's business, where they feel the need, like, all right, I need this in my business in the day to day, to the point where I need to pay for it every month. Then you know you're starting to build something great. I wouldn't recommend starting in software. And if you are, definitely have someone that is nuanced on the technical side of things so that you don't get completely crushed. This isn't my first software company. I've built others before, and I've built others that have failed horribly.
Tell me about one of those. Tell me about one of the failures.
Yeah, for sure. So when I was, this is almost 8 or 9 years ago, I was 19 years old. I was still in college. We ended up building a software, or this is like me trying to build one of my own for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was called MailFunnels. So this was a email marketing automation app for Shopify merchants. Ironically enough, before Klaviyo was out. How did I get beat? They had tons of money, execution, great minds, VC backed. I mean, they raised a tremendous amount, and it shows you what resources and people could do, even if you are ahead timing wise, right? So their ability to execute. Meanwhile, I'm like a college kid that's bootstrapped, put his first 20 grand into paying a developer to get all this done.
And trying to tackle a pretty big problem, right?
Yeah.
E-commerce email, like that's a big software company instead of something niche.
For sure. And then also not understanding, you know, how much detail needs to go into that to work at a high level and have people enjoy using the product and then continue to pay for it. It's difficult, right? So had that rolling for about a year, year and a half. It was okay. We were making some money, but realizing that we were, you know, really left in the dust at one point. And had to let it go to rest and move on to the next thing.
You lose a lot of money on that one?
No, just about broke even.
Okay, great. Yeah,
so
it sounds like a win. Hey, learning experience.
Definitely a win, but it's taxing. Okay. There's a lot that goes into it. The 12 to 18 months that you're, you know, day in, day out, pushing content, figuring out ways to execute, getting people in place, making sure that people below you and their payroll is getting paid out before your own, right? So it's definitely a difficult one to keep afloat, but software is a different beast for sure. But, you know, that's why there's a bunch of different avenues to start outside of it. Not that no one can't just jump into it and try for their first business. It's going to be very low hit rate for people to just dive in and have no experience.
If you were starting a software company right now, say ad copy AI goes to shit, you're like, all right, I need a new idea, need to launch something. Like, what steps do you take to launch that product?
Well, I hope we'd exit rather than go to shit. That sounds a lot better.
Yeah. Is that in the cards soon?
I would hope so.
Or down the line. Maybe.
I would hope so. Yeah. That's definitely why we built this, to build something that would be high impact. Maybe it turns into a lifestyle business and we keep it, but perhaps an exit or scaling to a high level would be great. But building a new software, it's really starting backwards. So before even going so heavy into investing tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars into code,
right,
you should probably do something that is the most simple version possible and chunking everything down that you want to achieve. So of course, everyone has this grand idea, but under that umbrella, there is, you know, hundreds of small moving parts that need to be executed for that to actually come to life.
Right.
So what is the most cost-efficient way for you to validate that? You know, do something such as a Figma prototype. That's not going to cost you $100,000 to make. Might cost you $1,500 or $2,000. Get that working and see what it would look like hypothetically for you to put production level code behind that without spending the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then give it to people to mess around with. They have a prototype. They can click around. They understand what's going on. And you could either validate or invalidate whatever your great idea or not so great idea potentially may or may not be. From there, then you could go ahead and start working towards hiring developers and implementing and developing code. But I think for the most cost efficient way to, you know, not get too overly invested and too in deep without any true validation is to, you know, build the most basic version and then see how that works and then explain your vision, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to tell what you have planned rather than spend a year or two investing everything that you have trying to make that happen and then getting to the end to realize that you have nothing because it was improperly planned.
I think that's so important. I see so many entrepreneurs making that mistake. They will build something that they're passionate about, that they think that people need and will want, without listening to the consumer and actually addressing a pain point that they really have. And they'll spend all this time and money building something just to later find out that, oh shit, people don't actually need this.
Yep.
They don't actually want it, or they're not willing to pay for it. Is there any process that you go through to validate an idea, the Figma protocol, letting people play around with it? But like, is this something that you need? And is this something you would pay for? How would you validate that idea?
That's a great question. I mean, of course, it varies from business model to business model, but to truly validate something is putting it in front of people. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a piece of software like that and you want to show that prototype to someone, put it in front of someone that it makes sense to, that can actually give you an honest answer and true feedback rather than just a stranger off the sidewalk, right? Yeah. Someone that's perhaps nuanced in technology and software, whatever might be your end customer, right? That's really who you want to be, because that's who you want to validate your product more than anything. Context is king in that sense.
Yeah.
And then the same thing for people that are in e-commerce, right? The only way to understand if you are going to succeed off of it, and you know, you could still do this in the most lean way possible with drop shipping, for example, you don't have to go out of pocket, build a landing page. It doesn't cost you much. It could take a few hours and throw up products and get some ads going and put those ads in front of people. That'll cost you maybe 5-6 hours of time and maybe $50 to $100 in testing your first initial ads. Are people clicking here? Are they adding to cart? It's those micro commitments towards the end goal that you want people to actually take that will validate or invalidate your actual idea. And of course, taking a meaningful swing at it and not half-assing it, because anyone could do that and see lackluster results off the bat. But making sure that's actually something that is built with time and mindfulness.
Correct me if I'm wrong, were you guys on AppSumo? I don't know if you're still doing it.
We were for a period of time.
I feel like that's a really good way to validate an idea. It's typically like a lifetime subscription to a new tool that's in beta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a good test is this person willing to pull out their credit card and spend on this thing? And then do they want to keep it? Or are they all getting refunds, which AppSumo gives you like 60 days to get your money back? How was that campaign for you? And what did you learn from being on AppSumo?
It was great. Interesting market, interesting customers, seeing what different use cases there could be out there, having people find stuff that they want to break, that they want to see more of. I think the biggest thing and takeaway that we definitely had from that was allowing people to dive into our platform and poke at things that they want to see more of.
Yeah.
So even if things aren't complete, right? So you don't need to have everything done to the highest level that, you know, it has to be perfect, right? Of course, you want to chase perfection, but it's never really going to be there. Perpetually working towards it is great. But one of the most validating items is when people see something and they want to dig deeper. And once they want to dig deeper, whether it's like our ad launching feature, right? So we have a part of it where you could upload your creatives and then push your ads to your ads manager, right? If no one said anything about it, we never got a support chat about it, probably means that people don't care.
Yeah.
When people start asking me, can you enable dynamic creatives? Can you do lifetime budgets? Can you do interest targeting?
Right.
Not only do we know what people want, but we know that they want to dig deeper and that there's more for us to uncover and provide value to the end customer.
Right.
So
they're saying focus more on that feature, build that one out.
Precisely.
That's what we want. Yeah.
And ignore the stuff that isn't really shaking and moving anything. More so than anything else, it just gets us more customers in the door, more people that we could interview. Doing one-on-one calls with my customers is one of my favorite things to do because it shows us what we're great at, what we need to work on, and what people want. And also allowed us to really get some more affirmations towards who our ideal customers were. We started very early as, you know, the tool for media buyers. Then we felt like maybe we're going to lean more towards e-commerce and in just e-commerce merchants. And lo and behold, after we rolled out all these features and different facets to the software, we realized, wow, agencies love our software. So we ended up becoming more of a agency and brand serving software. And of course, this is always going to be evolving over time, but having a greater idea of who to serve by hearing from them is really good. And we actually, even before AppSumo, we sort of shot ourselves in the foot, I guess you could say, by way of sacrificing revenue and rolling out a free plan. We were, in the earlier days, so desperate for feedback that we're like, I don't care if you pay us, sign up, use it, let us know if it's good or bad, right? And the number one way is to remove all barriers to entry and make it free. So we're thinking, you know, how important is MRR in the short term if we can't build a product that is validated and liked by most people and stuff that actually adds value? Because in doing so, you're able to see, are people really willing to vote with their credit card, right? Are they going to upgrade from free to paid?
Right.
Are they going to sign in and use it once and then leave forever, right? That is just more of the most brutal truth that you could ever see. And when we first did it, it crushed us. We expected to see a bunch of people going through that process of upgrading, and it didn't go that way, right? So we had tons of leads coming in for free. We had great SEO, just our domain name, great product, good value props, but the product needed so much work, right? So it was sort of a wake-up call that, all right, we need to invest more in certain areas or pull different levers. We're like, do we go down the path of creative and helping create creative with AI? Do we just focus on copy? And that really took us to the point of just digging deep on Meta and what we're best at. Ironically enough, I got my first clients and where I started running some of my first ads after I transitioned from influencer marketing super early on.
Yeah.
So we sort of built this tool, put it out there, got punched in the face, iterated over and over again, and now people are starting to really love what we have.
So ad copy AI, I didn't even think about the SEO behind it. Probably anyone searching for ad copy or AI ad copy, you guys are the first ones to come up. Was that the original vision, is just focusing on the ad copy, like using AI to generate the best ad copy? And if so, how has it changed? Like, what is the new vision?
Yeah, so I got that domain name for $70. And people love it.
Yeah, it's a great domain.
So it was a huge, huge part of succeeding, getting signups early on for sure, and still is to this point. But initially, I built it as a copy tool. We started as a Chrome extension, which is, you know, a fraction of what we are to this day.
Yeah.
I built it with Lucas in the vision of, you know, me myself being a media buyer. All right, I'm in Ads Manager. How can I get really good copy very quickly? Click Chrome extension. Here's my product URL. Grab that primary text headline, throw it in, I'm set.
Nice. Right?
It was great. People loved it. Great feedback. And honestly, I don't think we would have made it too crazily far down this path if it wasn't for, you know, having that grander vision and then having the advisory team also help us and make sure that we dug deep and didn't veer off chasing the woman in the red dress or the shiny object, whatever you may like to call it in your own lens, right? Because there are so many ideas that come up. And what we decided to drill down on is, like I said, what we do best and what we deliver to our clients, even on the agency side, is running meta ads and building that deeper. Because we could have went and chased Google. We could have went and chased TikTok, right? Sure. But we stuck to one thing and we're getting very, very good at it. And the end goal is to chip away and continue to work towards degrees of autonomy to the point where we have what is equivocal or even better than a junior level media buyer in your business through AI, which we're probably about a quarter or two away from achieving. And we're really excited to roll that out and make sure that it is making a true impact on people's business.
Yeah, that's huge. Regarding the name, it's a great name, great domain. Do you ever feel like you pigeonholed yourself into being like a copy tool when people see ad copy? Have you ever thought about changing it or what the future is going to look like when you are doing AI like creative generation?
Yeah, it's definitely been a thought, but quite frankly, it's not too much of a concern at this point. The biggest thing is just delivering at a high level of what we do. Copy is still the backbone of what we deliver and a part of it. So like we're turning more into a launching and optimization suite. You can't launch without copy. So it's more of like copy and paste, perhaps from ad copy to your ads manager. We've joked about this and we have our own little insider like nuances about how it could still apply. It's like, oh, it's fine. But I think no matter what, if we have a great product that people love, I'm not too worried about it. I do have some backup names in my head and then we'll see where we end up. But
anything you're willing to share in the backup names?
Not to this day, because they gave me way too high of a price on the domain purchase. So I got to try and keep the negotiations low.
Yeah, that's tough. So a little bit about AI. What is the coolest thing that you want your product to do? I know it's like we're 2 years into AI. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind every day.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see your tool? What would you like to see it do? And then I'd love to chat about some of the future of AI and other stuff that you're excited for.
Where I really see it going and what I'd like to accomplish is sort of what I foresee as the universal approach of AI. Everyone is so caught up and concerned about, you know, AI taking away jobs and harming people's ability to earn, right? Yeah. But in essence, what it can do is actually just increase your output and make your life easier. So people are going to be affected by it. People are going to lose jobs, but they're going to find work or jobs or opportunities in other ways that we're going to be able to achieve. And what it's doing already for other people is just like, if you look at it in the context of a lawyer, right? Paralegals might not be needed as much, but you're still going to need that expert level lawyer to look over everything that may have been reviewed or drafted by AI to point it out for inaccuracies or stuff that could be done better just based off of years of experience and being well nuanced. Granted, AI might be better than some lawyers that are out there right now that have passed the bar, right? Yeah. But we want to achieve that as well and be able to allow people to move faster and do more with less input, right? So keeping your output the same or making it greater with less being put in. And that's really our goal is, you know, the junior level media buyers are something that could be replaced, or allowing someone who is running their own agency to empower them to serve 10 clients rather than 3 at a high level because they're able to work faster thanks to AI is something that we're passionate about. And I think utilizing that in the right way to build that foundation and achieve things, utilizing all of the context and data that people or humans might not be aware of, and invalidating some of that error, coming up with new ideas to then put that into the hands of high level operators, people that are experts in their specific field to then approve, disapprove, and revise and push that out is the biggest thing. And now whether it's a lawyer, a media buyer, a marketing agency, that's where I see AI really coming in. And that's what we want to achieve is to be able to push a lot of those things for you, take away all the menial tasks that you really don't need to be doing.
Yeah.
And empowering the business owner.
When I was talking to a radiologist the other day, he's like, are we going to get replaced by AI? I'm like, you're not going to be replaced, but you might be replaced by doctors who are using AI if you're not.
Yeah.
So it really is just a tool that's going to make somebody more productive. So the radiologist who uses AI in his practice is going to be worth 10 times more because he's able to produce 10 times more revenue.
Exactly.
But those experts are still going to be needed, I think.
Yeah.
Any other tools on your radar that you see in development you're super excited for? Anything else you're dabbling in or people that are doing really exciting stuff in AI marketing?
By way of the AI space, I mean, I'm really interested for the wave to break for creatives like videos and images to get to the point where it's stuff that could be published, right? Or stuff that could be a high quality ad, right? So of course you could generate images one off like with Midjourney that are fantastic, especially when you look at where it started. Now with video, when you're creating a video, there's the ability to generate stuff that's phenomenal, right? But let's say you wanted to put in a revision and say, all right, well, remove some of the coloring here or remove this part of this scene. It gives you a completely different output when you run through it again, right? So it sort of has that blank slate context. It's almost like the movie 50 First Dates, where it's like you walk up to it every time, you get something completely different, right? So quite funny enough, I think paring that context down with the technology to be able to fine tune those details is what I'm really most excited for. And almost quite nervous as to like, what if it gets in the wrong hands or wrong situation? We already see people that are like the elderly getting scanned by AI phone calls saying it sounds like their family member, right? So it's going off into a little bit of the wild, wild west right now. And I'm interested to see where we end up, if there's going to be any sort of regulation. But I think technology for the better is what I'm most excited for, and fine tuning those details.
It's an exciting time to be alive. I love following it. And you see all the new AI video tools coming down the pipeline.
Yep.
The new AI music maker. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No, I haven't.
Like, type in what you want the song to be about, and boom, you've got like a perfect lyrical written song in the style of whoever you want. It's going to be insane. It's an exciting time to be alive for sure.
That it is.
All right, brother. Where can people find you? Who is AdCopy AI good for? Mm-hmm. And what's a good like place for them to go sign up?
Our domain, adcopy.ai.
AdCopy, that's complicated. I don't know if people are going to be able to find that.
AD.
I'll put it in the description for anyone who can't spell.
That's definitely where you'll find me as well. I don't like to do too much on social other than sharing stuff that I'm passionate about. But definitely there on our website. And who it's built for is brands and agencies that are looking to run better and more effective meta ads. And by way of even like customer interviews or speaking to people that are using the software, trying to help them in their business, that's where I am on the day to day. That and then in my free time, just hanging out and designing clothes in my free time.
Are those any of your designs?
Yeah, the shirt actually is.
What is it?
Kenzen Studio. So it's just an idea that I had, and trying to do that in my after hours to sort of decompress when I'm not working on software or ads, and have some fun.
Nice. Fashion designer on the side. What about the hat? New York Sushi Club.
This is from Matsuhisa and Stamped. They did a collaboration for all the Nobu locations throughout the world to put out some little capsule drops. So love some good sushi. So probably go get that over here at 4-2 soon.
Cool. Do you sell clothes?
Yeah, we will be soon. Waiting to finalize a few final samples and get things moving soon.
Cool. I got to send you a link. I appreciate you coming on, brother. This is a blast. Love talking about ads and software.
Likewise.
I learned out about this stuff. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.